Hey, this is Peter Biello, host of The Bookshelf from NHPR. And if you like this podcast, you will also like NHPR's 10-Minute Writer's Workshop. In each episode, NHPR's Virginia Prescott speaks with authors about their process, their bad habits, and their best advice for aspiring writers. So even if you are not a writer, it is fascinating to hear how today's notable authors get their work done. Really, really inspiring. If you are a writer, interesting, even if you aren't. So subscribe to the 10-Minute Writer's Workshop on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. Okay, on to the bookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. The state of New Hampshire is as much an idea as it is a place. New Hampshire represents the idea of living simply, of living close to nature, and of course, living freely. In the early 1930s, the state began marketing itself as a kind of Yankee paradise with a magazine called the New Hampshire Troubadour. This magazine, long out of print, may be responsible for the way people outside New Hampshire think about it. Author Howard Mansfield recently wrote about the Troubadour for New Hampshire Magazine, and he joins me now to talk about it. Welcome, Howard.
Oh, it's a great pleasure, Peter.
So the New Hampshire Troubadour, it wasn't something that you were familiar with until you went on, was it vacation in New Zealand?
Yeah, my wife, Cy Montgomery, was there riding on some of those crazy critters, you know, and I came over to do some hiking. And we were standing by this amazing lake. I think it was Lake Taupo. And it's this fantastic turquoise color. Unbelievable. You've never seen a lake like it. And it has black swans, not white swans, which are, I guess, pretty rare or common over there in New Zealand. And this fellow comes over and introduces himself and asks us where we're from. And we say, of course, the United States. And he goes, where? And we keep narrowing it down. Finally, we say New Hampshire. And he's like, it's like he hit the jackpot. He said, I always wanted to go there. We said, why? And he said, you know this magazine, New Hampshire Troubadour. We said, "No, we don't. So he and his wife had us back to his house for tea and showed us this little magazine. It's like pocket size. It has black and white illustrations. And it just captivated this fellow.
And this was a magazine, an original from either the 30s, 40s, or early 50s?
Yeah, yeah. The New Hampshire Troubadour was published by the state from 1931 to 1951. It's kind of an amazing, it's like an early episode in branding before people used that kind of language and were that cynical about it. I think each issue was really sincerely felt.
Meaning what exactly? The authors of the magazine actually sincerely believed that New Hampshire was a kind of Yankee paradise that the whole world should know about?
The first issues were probably created by this fellow named Thomas Dreyer. He was an advertising copywriter, and he made apparently a fortune publishing these business magazines with Company News and Positive Thinking. And to him, New Hampshire was a Yankee Shangri-La. It was the relief from the terrible Great Depression. Up here was beauty. Up here was contentment. And he wrote these little homilies about bringing in a birch log or at the farm, time flows smoothly, but we find contentment. And it has this kind of attitude that even though it's going out to city mice, we're all in on this together, you know? We all know that this is the way to live. And we all know that this is waiting for you should you ever come to New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. And that was a consistent vision throughout the life of this magazine.
Through Thomas Dreyer's tenure and through the next editor, too, was this fellow by the name of Don Tuttle, who ran in, during the war, from the Depression to the World War II.
Mm-hmm. And some of the writers for this magazine, you listed two in your article. One was Ernest Elmo Calkins?
I'm not sure.
Maybe that's lost. The pronunciation's lost to history. And also Walter Dorwin Teague, who were pretty significant in their own right. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this really jumped out at me. I was in the New Hampshire Historical Society Library doing some research and I had some time. So I said, I'm going to look at some troubadours, you know, because it was in the back of my mind. And I was reading through what Dreyer wrote. And all of a sudden I see these names. And I know these names because I've written for international design magazines and architecture magazines in New York. And those two names you just mentioned, Walter Dorwin Teague and Ernest Elmo Calkins, they were pioneers in creating demand for products. Teague designed the iconic Texaco station that you would think of, the white station with the three bands around it and the Kodak camera that used to have the speed lines on it. And Calkins really believed that we had to stimulate demand and consumption. People would just buy a stove and damn it, they would keep it forever. This was no good. So we wanted your stove to date, to go out of date, and wanted to create, as he said, dissatisfaction. He asked, can we create artificial obsolescence? That's what he believed in. And as the Depression came on, this became a big problem. You know, no one's buying anything, no one's producing anything. How do we get this going? So both these people, Teague and Calkins, are real cosmopolitan movers for the streamlined modern future. And here they are writing these little essays about how great it is to be summering under the elms here in this little village, Melvin Village, by Lake Winnipesaukee. Totally surprised me.
I know. I was going to ask, how do guys like that end up writing for a magazine that almost values and champions simplicity and easy living?
Well, that's just the question, isn't it? Now, our friend Thomas Dreyer was obviously a big advertising guy, so we would have known Calkins. Industrial design, as we call it today, started out as consumption engineering, and some of the first people in that field were from advertising. So they must have been in the same circles back in New York. I mean, that's all I can figure out.
Mm-hmm. How did they land on the name Troubadour?
I don't know. You know, he might have published, Dreyer might have published another magazine called Troubadour. I don't really know.
Overall, it seems like maybe the style has changed, but the substance of New Hampshire state marketing seems to be pretty much the same.
Well, here's the great thing that Thomas Dreyer knew. He knew he was creating this idea of New Hampshire, this image. I mean, it's all there in the description of his house. He said his house, which is 150 years old, he's talking about how wonderful it is, and it says the whole place suggests permanence, solidity, comfort, peace, and simplicity. And over again, he put New Hampshire forward as having that. And so people would come to New Hampshire to find that. So Dreyer knew that we live in our idea of the world as much as we live in the world. And this has certainly been true ever since the first white folks came here and named this place after an English county, an Englishman. So we've been living in the idea of New Hampshire ever since. It's one of the great things that he knows. And when you talk about selling a state today, like New Hampshire or Vermont, that's you're selling the idea of the place. People come up here and they're looking for that idea.
Huh. So to what extent do you think Dreyer is responsible for the way people outside New Hampshire understand what the state is?
Given that you could go over to New Zealand and find someone with this magazine who's totally entranced, he must have had a big hand, him and that other fellow I told you about who followed as the editor. It created a very strong image at a time when people maybe weren't that sophisticated about interrogating images. But, you know, it continues today. He was a great rusticator. Yeah, that's like a 19th century word for people who come to the country and think, oh, this is just lovely. And there's so many different versions of rustification and celebration of small town rural life that live and start in New England. You could just, there's a huge list.
So if you wanted to find a copy of The Troubadour, what would you have to do?
Well, you could go to the state library and read it. You could go on eBay. There's copies all over the place on eBay, I think. If you go to yard sales, I think I've seen them at yard sales kind of piled up. So I think it's just around, and given the prevalence of barns, I'm sure there's some sitting up there, a lot of issues sitting up in barns right now.
Well, Howard, thank you very much for coming in and talking about the New Hampshire Troubadour.
Sure, Peter. Great. I really enjoyed it.
That's Howard Mansfield. His article about the New Hampshire Troubadour is in the April issue of New Hampshire Magazine. And you can find a link to my conversation with Howard about his book about New Hampshire sheds and his top five reading recommendations at nhpr.org. We are always looking for reading recommendations from you. Tell us what book you haven't been able to put down. Our email address is books@nhpr.org, and you can also tweet us at @nhprbookshelf. And by the way, if you like The Bookshelf, subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts and share it on social media with the hashtag Tripod. That's TRYPOD. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.